The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I have the pleasure of reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we're going to return to the June 2022 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The theme this month is my favorite one of the year, the annual coastal issue, Boat Towns, Moorhead City, Oriental, Beaufort, Hatteras, Southport, Ocracoke, and New Bern. We're going to read a bunch of short articles today about various aspects of boating. And we're going to start out with Beautiful Fishers. A working boat is a thing of beauty, a perfect marriage of form and function. The design may come from the eye and instincts of a single talented craftsman, or it may evolve over generations of hard use to refine out all that has proven unnecessary. What's left is a craft with a sound hull shaped for the waters in which it will cruise and rigged efficiently for the kind of work it will do. Rugged and reliable enough to stand up to wind and weather and carry its crew safely out to the fishing grounds and back home again. This is written by Philip Girard. He starts out with a Core Sound Sink Netter. You can spot this boat a long way off by the graceful curving upsweep of its bow, known as the Harker's Island Flare. It's no frill, but a functional design element that allows for a clean, fast run through choppy sound waters and makes for a broad working foredeck and side decks. The flared design is attributed to Brady Lewis, who built the first of these boats in Salter Path and then moved to Harker's Island between 1922 and 1926. One of his 1946 creations, the restored sink netter Gene Dale, is displayed at the Core Sound Waterfowl Museum and Heritage Center, and the Lewis name is still prominent among island boat builders. My father, Burgess Lewis, built boats. He built them in the backyard, and I was the oldest of four brothers, so I had to end up helping him, recalled Jamie Lewis in 2016, the year that he, his brother Houston, and his son James received the North Carolina Heritage Award. I just saw how it was done by watching him, helping him, and I just tried it on my own, and that's the way I got started. The Lewises modify their designs to suit a boat's intended use, from work boats to sport boats, and they rarely work from formally drawn plans. With big boats, we sketch out the plan on a piece of plywood, James explained in a 2016 interview. But after the sketch, the boats are pretty much made from an image in the head. And then we have the work skiff. These flat-bottomed boats with a hard chine, that is, an angled hull with little rounding, are the workhorses of shallow waters and come in various sizes and configurations depending on their use. Their distinguishing feature is the well, a boxy opening inside the hull or simply a cutout made by moving part of the stern forward where the outboard engine is usually mounted. Michael B. Alford, in Traditional Workboats of North Carolina, explains, "The well keeps the engine and propeller away from the trawl and dredge warps, that's the towing lines, reducing the chance of costly entanglements that could damage gear and result in time lost from fishing." Mullet are caught in a runaround gill net, which the crew plays out over the stern as the boat circles the school, then hauls back in by hand when it's loaded with fish. Flounder skiffs need a bit more juice, Alford writes. powerful outboard motors mounted in wells built inside the skiff make these boats very swift and enable them to haul large trawl nets of shellfish dredges. A beach dory. A high, sharp bow is the signature of the beach dory, a 16 to 18 foot craft launched off the beach into rough surf, powered by an outboard motor hung inside a well and protected by high sides. Dory fishing season runs through October and November when cold weather and nor'easters or mullet blows spur the fish into their southbound migration. Piloting a flat-bottomed dory into the teeth of thrashing breakers calls for expert seamanship and old-fashioned moxie. The dory crew carries a seine, or gill net, as long as 800 yards over the breakers into the lanes where migrating fish are passing, while a crew on the beach anchors a line attached to the net. Once out of the breakers, the dory crew circles a school of fish, blues, sea trout, striped bass, Atlantic croaker, or striped mullet, and deploys the seine in a U-shape, the two wings ending up in a bag where the fish are trapped. The beach crew ties its end of the rope to a truck, or in bygone days, a team of horses, and hauls the heavy bag ashore. Next, Sharpie schooner. The first Sharpies appeared in New England, narrow, flat-bottomed boats suited for tonguing oysters in shallow waters. In 1874, George Ives moved to Beaufort from Connecticut, intending to ship fresh fish and oysters on ice. The following year, he returned home to commission two Sharpies because he knew that they'd be more efficient than the cunners or dugout log boats that the North Carolina watermen were using. When a local named Daniel Bell challenged him to a race, Ives' Sharpie left Bell's boat trailing in her wake. Bell was a convert and soon built his own Sharpie, the Julia Bell. The flat-bottomed, cross-plank design allowed any down-east waterman with a modicum of carpentry skills to construct his own boat cheaply and quickly. Soon hundreds were built in backyards along the coast. Remarkably versatile, the Sharpie also was used for hauling cargo, mail, and passengers, and evolved into a larger hull with more sail power. Eventually, it was reconfigured as the gaff-rigged, core-sound Sharpie schooner. As a picture here says, the Stars of Sea Sound. The North Carolina Maritime Museum in Beaufort serves as a hall of fame for our state's traditional wooden boats. Visit the museum to view exhibits on Sharpies, shad boats, and more, then cross the street to watch boat builders at work at the Harvey W. Smith Watercraft Center. You can even sign up to take a boat building course. Along with its sister locations in Hatteras and Southport, the Maritime Museum tells the story of our working waters. Learn more at ncmaritimemuseums.com. And there is a picture here of the two-masted schooner with three sails as a jib coming out from the front. Shrimp trawler. There's some nautical irony in the fact that the largest, most complex of the traditional fishing boats is used to catch one of the sea's smallest creatures. The typical North Carolina trawler is 30 to 80 feet long with a high bow and bulwarks, a pilot house forward, and a working deck aft. Large flat doors hold open the two wings at the mouth of the trawler net as it scoops up shrimp. Some smaller vessels pull two 30-foot skimmer nets, which do not require doors. Two strong outriggers allow for a double trawl, or even a quadrig or four-barrel trawl, using smaller, more controllable nets than the traditional single trawl net used in the 1950s. A turtle excluder device fitted into the neck of the net allows turtles, sharks, and other large fish to escape. As a trawler cruises by at walking speed, its powerful Caterpillar engine hauling the heavy nets behind, its outriggers spread like great wings, it carries an air of stately pride. And then there's a shad boat. The shad boat is the graceful belle of the fleet, a shallow draft boat with a high bow to take rough seas and broad bottom for stability. The keel was made from a split log of rot-resistant Atlantic white cedar, locally called juniper. On a frame of naturally curved juniper knees, the boat was sculpted from the top down with a deep fore and aft curve ending in a heart-shaped transom. The main spritsail hung low and broad off a light diagonally running spar, giving the boat power to carry pound net gear to the fishing grounds and haul back the catch. That shape was first carved as a half-hull model sometime in the 1870s by George Washington Creef Sr., a lean, bearded man affectionately known on Roanoke Island as Wash. He became the most famous builder of the shad boat, crafting two at a time. The unplanked center well held plenty of fish, and when the fishing was done, some commercial fishermen used the boats for progging, carrying groceries or freight, cording their own bellies across the sound, even running bootleg liquor. In 1987, the legislature declared it the state historical boat. And now we're going to pick up where we left off last week when we were reading an article entitled Dock and... And I can't read my own writing here. Dock and what? Well, let's just read what the, what's... Dock and Dine is what I think it says. These are places along the waterfront where you can eat. We last covered the water, Saltwater Grill in Swansboro. We moved down to Moonrakers in Beaufort. Skiffs, sailboats, and luxury vessels alike make their way along Taylor's Creek toward the red and blue canopies and string lights that mark Moonraker's popular rooftop bar. Boaters have disembarked for a meal, often find themselves taking in the view of the islands that make up the Rachel Carson Reserve across the creek while sipping one of the restaurant's frozen margaritas or nautical-inspired libations like the Spy Sea Fresca, a tequila cocktail with jalapeno, agave, and lime. The menu at this three-story dining spot, located in Beaufort's historic district, celebrates Carolina coastal cuisine with a wide selection of seafood dishes, including shrimp and grits for dinner and cornmeal-crusted oysters served with black-eyed peas and country ham for brunch. They're at 326 Front Street. They have a website, moonrakersbeaufort.com. Next, we talk about Sears Landing in Surf City. According to a legend passed down through the generations, many years ago, a pirate left his ship to establish a trading post and operate a pole barge ferrying people to Topsail Island. Today, Sears Landing sits on the site of that trading post in what is now Surf City. The restaurant serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner indoors and outdoors on a covered deck overlooking the intercoastal waterway. Diners can enjoy cocktails in rocking chairs on the porch while waiting to be seated, and pups are welcome at the dog-friendly picnic tables. Meals are best started off with a peel-and-eat shrimp dipped in Sears Landing house-made horseradish-heavy cocktail sauce. They're at 806 Roland Avenue, searslanding.com. And now, Southern Salt Seafood Restaurant in Moorhead City. When you step in a seafood restaurant, the last thing you want to hear is, "We're out of oysters." But at Southern Salt, those words might be an opportunity for adventures. Owner Sammy Boyd also runs an aquaculture business that's a five-minute boat ride from the Carteret County Restaurant. Sometimes they'll take customers out to the farm to get their own seafood, Boyd says. It doesn't get any fresher than that. At Southern Salt, everything from the food you order to the tables you eat it on, made of reclaimed wood from the dock behind the restaurant, originally built in 1938, is an homage to how waterfront seafood restaurants used to be. When I was growing up, I could order local seafood that was caught that day, and as I got older, seafood started coming from farther and farther away, Boyd says. I decided that I was going to bring fresh seafood back to the table. They're on Evans Street, Southern Salts Seafood. Dot calm. The Edenton Bay Oyster Bar in Edenton. Chef Heather Mitchell was entering a customer's order at Edenton Bay Oyster Bar one day when, out of a picture window, she saw an osprey swoop down and pluck a fish out of Pembroke Creek. Once a showroom for boat sails, Edenton Bay Oyster Bar is mere feet from the water. You step off of our patio and you step onto the dock, Mitchell says. As much as possible, she sources her ingredients locally and seasonally, depending on what comes off the boats that day. Her take on oysters Rockefeller, called Southern Oysters Rock, combines the delightfully salty flavor of the sea with some of North Carolina's land-based favorites, collard greens, bacon, and Texas Pete. Boaters often order a dozen each of her specialty oyster dishes, which also include barbecue, grilled cheese, and sushi flavors, served on the half shell. They're at West Queen Street, Edenton Bay, oysterbar.co. Not com, co. Backwater Jack's Tiki Bar and Grill, I've been there, in Washington, on the Pamlico River, just downstream from Little Washington's historic waterfront. Boaters and kayakers navigate their vessels under the Runyon Creek Bridge near Jack Creek and tie up at the boat ramp. Backwater Jack's, a Margaritaville-esque spot for waterfront meals and live music, welcomes them by road or by river in bathing suits and cover-ups. The second floor offers views of the river, but on spring and summer evenings, soak up the lively tiki bar atmosphere near the stage at the gravel-covered patio, Pebble Beach, where bands play every weekend. East Main Street, Backwater Jack's, that's plural, tiki bar, .com. Dockhouse Seafood and More at Holden Beach. Customers gaze out over the dock, watching a pelican search for fish in the passing in the wake of passing boats. As they dig into their own meals of calabash-style seafood or local favorites like mac and cheeseburger or chicken and waffles. Nearby the Holden Beach Bridge frames a summer sunset over the intercoastal waterway. I love to watch the sunset from the dock every day, says co-owner Tommy Economist. It is always beautiful. Economist vacationed in Holden Beach all of his adult life. Drawn to the island by the beauty and the good company, he started Dockhouse with his brother and a family friend in 2018. Today he works alongside his son, making sure to take time each day to appreciate the view. And there at 103 South Shore Drive, DockhouseHB.com. And now we're going to flip over to this. I don't think we've read this article before. Let me see how long it is. I'm not quite sure we have enough time to finish it. No, we don't. I thought we had some more little short articles. Let's go back to the front of the magazine to read some of these articles that I never get a chance to read because they're nice and short, so we won't get stuck halfway through an article somewhere. Let's see. This is under June to-do list, and I don't think any of these are dated, so I think you can get to all of them, even depending on when you listen to this. Equine Adventures. A horseback ride to the beach begins at the sound end of Hatteras Island and winds along sandy trails through Frisco's maritime forest. And keep your eyes peeled for the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse in the distance. For riders seeking speed, guides will demonstrate how to canter along the water's edge. They're at Piney Ridge Road in Frisco, equineadventures.com. Country Time Equestrian Events. Enjoy a relaxing summer evening with a guided horseback ride just outside of Charlotte. Follow your guide through cornfields and farmland as the sun sets. You'll return just in time for an old-fashioned cowboy dinner featuring grilled chicken, pork chops, mashed potatoes, and baked apples around the campfire. There on Joe Lee Helms Road in Indian Trail, North Carolina, horsebacktrailriding.com. I bet a lot of people who have horses wish they could have that website address. Sandy Bottom Trail Rides, starting at a fourth-generation family ranch in Marshall. Horseback rides at Sandy Bottom traverse winding mountain trails leading to expansive views. You can even catch a glimpse of the Big Bald Summit and neighboring Tennessee. Longer rides include a stop at the Little Pine Gem Mine, where you can dismount and pan for treasure. They're at Caney Fork Road in Marshall, North Carolina, sandybottomtrailrides.net. And now, a little article about Moorhead City. A local historian has made it his life's work to learn as much as he can about his hometown, a hub for sport and commercial fishing. Wherever Rodney Kemp goes, people tell him stories about their families and ancestors, about their own lives growing up in Moorhead City, about the town and its history. If I go to Walmart, they'll stop me in the aisles and say, "I need to tell you this story," Kemp says. They're all storytellers, but they won't perform them. They just want to share them because they know I'll tell them. Kemp has been giving lectures through the History Museum at Carteret County since 2001, but he's been a historian and storyteller and self-proclaimed fish house liar for most of his life. He got hooked on local history when he was 10 years old during the parades and performances of Moorhead City's 1957 centennial celebration. His collection of newspaper clippings, documents, photographs, and stories has grown alongside the town, a once quiet fishing village now filled with downtown activity. Carteret County's history is Kemp's favorite subject to lecture on, and his quarterly talks often draw 80 to 100 people. It's quite an honor for me, he says. Here is Local's Guide to Moorhead City. If you want to play, go to the History Museum of Carteret County. This is something they were doing on June 10th, but you can find more about them at carteretthistory.org. And then June 10th to 19th was the Big Blue Rock Marlin Tournament, which started in 1957 when fisherman Jimmy Croy caught a blue marlin with the help of Captain K.W. Bill Olson. The prize? A child's red wagon filled with silver dollars. This event continues to grow, now features six levels of competition and a more than $4 million cash purse. How about places to eat? Redfish Grill and Bar. Those beautiful signs that are on the Redfish, Kemp says of his carved wood fish logos at one of his favorite downtown restaurants. My brother Charles makes those. He's the one that got all our daddy's talent for artwork. Inside, customers can dine on seafood entrees like baked shrimp penne, stuffed flounder, and Carolina crab cakes. Plus, fried fish, and plenty of land-based options. Casa San Carlo. Chef Cario Capiello has been creating dishes that draw on his Italian heritage for 30 years. In 2017, at the suggestion of a friend, he moved his restaurant from Raleigh to Moorhead City, where he can often be seen in the dining room, interacting with guests as they enjoy traditional recipes that have been in his family for generations. How about the Sanitary Fish Market and Restaurant? The Sanitary, named for, yes, its clean conditions, has been in business since 1938, and Kemp remembers eating there often as a kid. When you went to the Methodist Church or the Baptist Church, you ate Sunday dinner at the Sanitary, he says. If the Methodist preacher went overtime, it was bad news because the Baptist would beat us down there. Everybody put clocks near the pulpit and said, "Don't go over." The Ruddy Duck Tavern. Using locally sourced seafood and produce, as well as low-impact takeout containers, this waterfront restaurant serves burgers, sandwiches, and seafood in generous portions with environmental sustainability in mind. Some dishes offer diners a bit of international flair, like the West Indies tuna, Thai chili, duck drumettes, and Argentine beef empanadas. Then there's the Sugarloaf Island Bakery. An island in Bogue Sound was named Sugarloaf because just before all that vegetation was there, it looked like sugar. Kemp says it's a fitting name for this downtown bakery whose pastries, pies, cakes, and cheesecakes, plus savory options like fresh bread and bagels, will satisfy any sugar lover's sweet tooth. Promise Land Market. Reclaimed wood, a pressed tin ceiling, and vintage signs lend a nostalgic atmosphere to this downtown wine shop, restaurant, and bar. Browse a large wine and beer selection, charcuterie, small plates, specialty foods, made in North Carolina, and cocktails. Try the market's signature Bloody Mary at Sunday brunch. Plus, meet a local artist during Artrageous events on most Thursdays. Drink. Reed's Coffee and Art and Framing. The name says it all. Well, almost. In addition to its specialty coffee and tea drinks, local art and custom framing, Reed's also offers smoothies in Ziploc-style pouches that'll make it feel like you're drinking a Capri Sun for grown-ups. And don't forget dessert with tasty treats like creme brulee. Fact or fiction? According to Morehead City lore, German soldiers may have landed on U.S. soil during World War II. The story goes that they disembarked from a submarine near Morehead City. Some say that the Germans bought groceries in town. Others say they saw a movie. Is any of it true? No one really knows, but Kemp believes what his mentor, former Mayor George Dill, told him years ago. Over on Bogue Banks on the ocean side, civilians would patrol in the evening with guns in case the Germans came ashore, Kemp says. One time, one of those civilians saw two bodies wash up and identified them as dead German soldiers and turned the bodies in. When they searched the bodies, they found tickets to the Morehead Theater. Ginny Gordon's. Kemp calls this kitchen supply store a friendly place, and in fact, he and the shop's late owner, Ginny Gordon, became friends after she took one of his classes. Jenny Morrison now runs her mother's namesake store, providing the community with dishware, cookware, and other kitchen implements, many from local and family-owned vendors. D.G.'s Gifts and Books. Established in 1934 by North Carolina legislator D.G. Bell, this gift shop has been the go-to spot for bridal and baby registries and other occasions for decades. Kemp remembers his mom going there often to buy gifts. Today, D.G.'s sells books by regional authors alongside tableware, jewelry, clothing, and accessories. You can also shop at ZZ Designs. Mother and daughter Elizabeth Ann Sardante and Michelle Zeff draw inspiration from the coast for their vibrant, colorful jewelry. They fill their downtown shop with gifts that complement their work, including clothing, art, and home goods. And finally, Parsons General Store. This gift shop opened in 1982, but the historic house and old-timey decor make it feel like it's been around forever. Two stories and seven rooms offer locally made art and home goods, saltwater taffy homemade chocolate, and old-fashioned candy. And Kemp says, my grandchildren love to get ice cream here. Hey, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.